Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by Thomas.
Hello.
And today we are going to be talking about existentialism. And I imagine that most people have had varying experiences of what provides their lives with meaning. I imagine spending the day with friends and family might provide you with more meaning than your daily commute to work, for example.
I mean, yes.
People understand that meaning is not necessarily a binary thing either. I think some things provide more meaning than others. And what we're going to do is look at what the condition of a human being is and what that can tell us about what provides meaning in our lives, which is the philosophy of existentialism. However, we're not just going to be talking about existentialism per se. We're going to follow the thread from some of the philosophers that laid the groundwork for the existentialist movement, as well as talking about some of the opposition to it. In the form of absurdism, which is actually my preferred form of philosophy, if you could call it a philosophy, which it kind of isn't. It's kind of anti-philosophy, which is another reason to like it,
could
really.
Could you call it nihilistic?
No, it's not nihilistic at all, because it tells people that it's not all worthless. You've just got to, well, I won't spoil it for now. But anyway, meaning, of course, it's not binary. Some things have more meaning than others, which is what I was getting to earlier. And therefore, the best thing to avoid being consumed by meaningless is pursuing meaning. And that is what we're going to try and set out to do here. Of course, if you want to have a virtuous life and you want motivation to engage in the world, then this is very important. And that's what meaning ultimately provides you with, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't necessarily have to delve into it for purely utilitarian reasons, but I'm sure everyone can appreciate the value of having meaning in their life. I don't really need to tell that explain that to people.
No, it seems to be an intuitive fact to all of us, but of course how we derive meaning is, that's the big question.
Mm-hmm. And that is what existentialism seeks to answer. And of course, it's a difficult concept to define, and it's something that's quite subjective as well, because it deals with subjective feelings of meaning in the first place. So my understanding is that it deals with our raison d'etre, or our reason for existence, and reconciling this with the fact we are a conscious being that must develop an understanding of ourselves to correctly orient ourselves in the world. And I've not taken that from anywhere else. That is just my own understanding. And I've actually read quite a large amount of the existential literature. And I believe that as our resident philosopher, you haven't really delved into existentialism very much.
Not anywhere near as much as German idealism, Kant, ancient philosophy. This is very much, I suppose, the area that I'm least versed on by some margin. I was introduced to it by Adorno through his extremely cynical take on it, which we'll get to later. But other than that, I've only observed it and at a distance. So I'm very much looking forward to talking about it today.
Yeah, so I basically delved into it in absurd detail when I was at university, to the point where I spent almost as much time reading and studying existentialism as my formal course, which was probably not helpful. But I wanted to have a well-established reason for going through university, for doing all of this stuff and laying the groundwork for my life. I wanted to know what the point of it all was, and therefore I saw it as very important to get that established early on as a foundation to then develop later on.
Do you think you have to be pushed into a position of despair to see the appeal in studying existentialism?
Not necessarily, because I think everyone has that innate curiosity for that sort of thing, or at least most people do. I don't think despair is a necessary precondition, but you want concrete answers, really, and the problem is that it's very difficult to find them. And I think I was trying to approach it very rationally, just like, well, I can't come up with any objective reason why anything matters, because as being like purely atheistic and rational about it, whereas it's not necessarily down to those things that you get a satisfying answer. But we shall get onto that. Existentialism is ultimately an individualistic philosophy that posits that for people to live a good life, they must have a good understanding of their own subjective experience of living, or of being more precisely. However, through the complexities of the world around us and our limited ability to understand it, we can never truly delude ourselves that we have any conclusive answers. And this is something that existentialists are quite strong on as well. Mm. And I very much agree that the world is too complicated to have any absolute certainties. Obviously, you can hold ideals as absolutes. So you can say, okay, yes, I know I don't want to go out and murder people. Mm. That's not what they're talking about here. Sartre, for example, is actually very favourable towards pursuing ideals and values and virtues, ultimately, although not necessarily in the Aristotelian sense.
No, absolutely not.
So existentialists reject any beliefs that posit that human beings can possess a complete understanding and therefore reject any form of objectivism or scientism, and they value the sensory experiences of subjectivity. They also reject most forms of idealism that place emphasis on man's ability to understand the world through his consciousness, reason, ideas, or spirit. Mm. So this is, it casts a lot of mankind's work basically out from the get-go, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, their reason for objecting idealism, I would guess, is something to do with the fact that idealism kind of rests on principles that you must first accept as rational before you see that there is an ideal to work towards. Mm-hmm. And that demands almost like a joint consensus, whereas existentialists, I think, across the board, work from the position that you can only verify that for yourself, mm-hmm. fundamentally. And so it's absurd, by definition, to pursue ideals when we don't know if they exist as ideals beyond, I suppose, the framework from which you mm-hmm. pursue them as ideals.
Yes, and Sartre has the belief that ideals, although they may be shared culturally, for example, they are still specific to the individual. Mm. And that's not necessarily untrue either, in that if you look at ideals, they vary between individuals, even though some people may have things in common from, say, a shared environment.
Yeah.
Although he wouldn't put it quite in those terms. So the term existentialism comes from the French Catholic philosopher Marcel, and he applied it to aspects of the philosophy of Jean-Paul Sartre. Sartre initially rejected the term in 1945, but eventually adopted it himself. And then Marcel later claimed to reject the label himself in favour of neo-Socratic. Mm. So there is a little bit of a problem when applying the label of existentialist, because it's very specific. However, there's still ongoing debate to this day how to apply the term. So some argue it should be limited to 40s and French existentialists from the 40s and 50s. So Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, Maurice Merleau-Ponty and Albert mm-hmm. Camus. Some extend it back to Kierkegaard and others go all the way back to Socrates. Mm-hmm. However, I'll be going from Kierkegaard just for the sake of brevity.
I would like to hear someone make the argument that existentialism can be traced back to Socrates, because he doesn't appeal to his own experience really at all. He merely works with concrete things and tries to create an argument using dialectics, or make an argument using dialectics by refusing the irrational claims of his opposition. That doesn't really appeal to existence at all.
I know, yeah.
But,
I think the only thing I can think of is in The Death of Socrates, obviously this was written, not necessarily written by Socrates himself, so, you know, it's probably someone putting words in his mouth, but he does talk about, well, if I cannot know things, and if I cannot interrogate the way the world is, then there is no point in living, and that's why he eventually...
That almost sounds in contradiction with the first premise that he worked from throughout his entire time as a philosopher, and that is the only philosophical claim you can make from the start is that you know nothing, and to proceed from there to see what you can know.
But he saw value in the inquiry, didn't he?
Yes.
Obviously, he wouldn't just be going around basically winding people up all the time, just like, you're wrong, you're wrong.
He did do that.
He did do that, yes, but he didn't do it for no reason.
No.
So, starting with Søren Kierkegaard, who was a Danish theologian and lived between 1813 and 1855, and I'm going to go through these chronologically to kind of see how people inherited from previous philosophers certain aspects of their philosophy, and I think this is very useful because both Camus and Sartre, who are the main people who deal with the existential questions, although Camus is not an existentialist, they inherit a lot from these previous people, and they're pretty open about this as well. And Sartre, for example, inherits a lot from Heidegger, and we'll get onto Camus in a second. So Kierkegaard's work prioritizes concrete human reality over abstract thinking. Kierkegaard explains that the absurdity of religious truths prevent us from reaching God rationally. He's, of course, known for the leap of faith, which is not a term he actually used himself, but has been used to refer to his belief that you just live as if God is real, and then the true value of religion is pursuing that path towards God. Even though he believed that you couldn't reach him rationally.
Yeah, and he does end up committing to the particular form of God that Christianity, that's included in Christianity, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he became an out-and-out Christian, but of course in more of a soul-searching reformation way, as opposed to someone, you know, went to church regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And in effect, what he's advocating is just an extension of the Reformation, really, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm. And of course... there is the fact that if you're looking at this existential philosophy, it's inherently atheistic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're religious, then your reason for existence is because God has created you, and you have to live
yes.
in a manner in which God has
ordained. And he gave you the ability to think and act for yourself and to have free will, and he gave you the right to oppose God, that otherwise you couldn't possibly be free and self-determining.
Yes.
And that from that, you can make the argument, as G.K. Chesterton does, that secularism is inscribed in Christianity itself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm. But yes, existentialism is inherently atheistic, and therefore you can't really describe Kierkegaard as an existentialist, because, of course, he was religious. So he, of course, proposed that each individual... not reason, society, or religious orthodoxy, is solely tasked with giving meaning to life and living it sincerely or authentically. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, this is the key part which many of the more recent existentialists actually inherited, in that it is the task of the individual to figure things out alone, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be guided by reason, society, or religion, and they have to have an authentic or genuine search for meaning in their life.
Mm, I take it he means enlightenment reason rather than reason in the grander sense.
I would imagine so, yes, because otherwise there's no point discerning anything, is there?
No.
So yes, I found a good quote here. This is quite an old one from 1940 from two University of Minnesota University professors called Norborg and Swenson, who summarise his existentialism quite nicely. So, Kierkegaard does not deny the fruitlessness or validity of abstract thinking, science, logic, and so on, but he does deny any superstition which pretends that abstract theorizing is a sufficient concluding argument for human existence. He holds it to be unforgivable pride or stupidity to think that the impersonal abstractions can answer the vital problems of human everyday life. Logical theorems, mathematical symbols, physical, statistical laws can never become patterns of human existence. To be human means to be concrete, to be this person here and now, in this particular and decisive moment, face to face with this particular challenge.
I wonder if Richard Dawkins ever read Kierkegaard. If not, I suggest that he should. He does.
Are you trying to say that he believes that everything can be abstracted to...
Richard Dawkins seems to... he's extremely good at criticising religion and unpacking the irrationalism and the contradictions intrinsic to Christianity, but doesn't see the contradiction in the faith that he places in science as the answer to explain the human condition, and doesn't seem to understand why it can never lay claim to facts about human nature in the way that he thinks.
Yeah,
and Kierkegaard seems to attack both of those both forms of dogmatism, whereas Dawkins attacks one but only in favour of the other, without realising that he's committing the same epistemic vice.
Yeah, although I am obviously a scientist, I think that there is a massive limitation to science in that it's still the same human beings that are partaking in it, and we're flawed beings that make mistakes.
But that itself is a scientific claim, is it not? About our fallibility as age, as scientific agents.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's sort of the current state of modern science, though, is not necessarily one of absolute certainty. In fact, it's actively discouraged, and skepticism of basically everything. You accept almost nothing is true, but evidence still is important in that you weigh up the evidence, but never delude yourself that you've got a conclusive answer about anything. And I think that that is a sort of sweet spot, and it's not necessarily that things have gone a different way from that, which is good. I mean, that's a promising and optimistic sort of direction for the future.
I agree.
So, moving on to Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche's existentialism originates from his belief that God is dead, meaning that fundamental readings of the Bible were inconsistent with reality. I don't know whether that's your understanding of it. I haven't actually read Nietzsche.
Well, so he basically believed that Christianity was presented a version of human nature that was fundamentally based on self-hatred, and didn't think that actually captured the excellence of man as it could be.
Yes.
And claims that, claimed by extension, that it's irrational, that we should worship something that facilitates and justifies suffering and ultimately enslavement to evil people, because that's ultimately where you end up. You end up forgiving people for doing evil things and almost veiling injustices under the guise of justice and forgiveness and repentance, etc. And that ultimately, if you're going to base society on that, then it's ultimately going to wither away quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And well, needless to say,
I do agree. To be honest, he also emphasised the fact that religion has no particular claim to morality, which is just an extension of Enlightenment thinking, really, isn't it?
More or less. Yeah.
And he also believed that behind moral prescriptions lies nothing but will to power. Therefore, if you're making moral prescriptions, it is simply a move to give yourself power.
Yes.
He also agreed with Kierkegaard that with the idea that the crowd is untruth, that the so-called autonomous, self-legislating individual is nothing more than a herd animal that has trained itself to docility and unfreedom by conforming to the universal standards of morality.
Oh, don't we know it?
Yes. So basically, he's trying to say that people aren't truly individuals. They are too influenced by other people. Yep. They're not truly moral beings because they are just influenced by each other.
Yeah, the most moral thing, by extension, ironically, is actually being truly self-legislating to the point where you impose yourself knowingly.
Mm-hmm. And Nietzsche's main contribution to existentialism was the idea that men must accept that they are part of the material world regardless of what else might exist.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually present in Camus' work as well, where he's just like, yes, we have this state, just accept it, get over it.
Yeah, he does make this point kind of lamentingly, though, in the sense that even though a part of him, as I suppose a pro-Enlightenment thinker in many respects, particularly in his early work, cherished the fact that we're now superseding the religious orthodoxy and focusing on the things that we do know to exist and the things that can be real ideals for us that can advance the human species, he acknowledged that there was this huge vacuum left over from the fact that, well, for hundreds of years, we've found a way to find meaning in our lives through religion. And now we're at the point where we need something to fill that void.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that could potentially replace it, this is, again, a profound point that Jordan Peterson makes, you end up positing like almost like the material world itself as that void. And I suppose you could look at the way that science has evolved, our obsession with it, with economics, with instrumental reasoning, to see that we've never really recovered from the faith that we once had in finding meaning through God. And as irrational as that was, now that we've woken up, it's plausible that we've actually arisen to something that's potentially far worse, far more of a social disease than what we left behind. And this is a problem that we don't seem to have within us to solve.
Mm-hmm. I think it's always difficult to know how much of a problem you're in that sort of sense when you're kind of mired and you've grown up and it's all you've ever known, because then the sort of existential threat, if you will, seems far higher. Whereas I think I imagine that in times of religion and the strict religious orthodoxy, people would have been so suffocated by the basic authoritarian policies that if you say things against the church, you get burnt alive. Yeah. I think we're not quite to that point, are we?
Not quite, but there are social groups who I know of who would quite like to take us there.
I know, of course. But thankfully, we're not quite to actual witch burnings yet.
Yes.
Well, it'll probably give us about a few more years, maybe. So yes, Nietzsche thought, as part of this world, men must live. If there is nothing else beyond life, a failure to live is a failure to realise human potential. Yeah. And this is something that is very important to existentialist thinking. And the next person is Martin Heidegger. And the most important publication is Heidegger's 1927 Being and Time, which is most associated with his existential thought. However, in 1946, he would reject the label of existentialist in reference to his earlier works, largely Being and Time. Mm-hmm. So much of his work focused on how to live authentically, and he believed that the pursuit of authenticity will lead us to meaning, which I very much agree with, actually. I think that if you truly care about pursuing meaning, well, you have to be authentic about it, otherwise you're not going to find what you're looking for, because you don't know the condition of yourself, and therefore you can't possibly know what will give you meaning, because you don't know what you are.
Is this almost a form of ultra-sentimentalism that Heidegger is advocating?
I'm not entirely sure what you mean.
As in the things that, I suppose, that immediately have value to us, irrespective of whether they're reasonable or not, or enough to justify why we should perhaps invest in them in a way beyond just seeing them sentimentally.
I don't think he'd quite put it in those terms necessarily. You could, I would explain it as being following one's own subjective values and beliefs and developing a good understanding of human subjectivity. That would be.
Yeah, it's just he has a very, very particular understanding of human subjectivity and authenticity. I mean, but both of those terms are, of course, thrown around quite loosely. But Adorno's criticism, and again, it's Adorno himself has been criticised for his understanding of Heidegger and Kierkegaard. He critiqued Kierkegaard at an earlier point as well. But in the jargon of authenticity, he criticised the entire existentialist philosophy, pointing the finger mainly at Heidegger, for his complete rejection of what Hegelians understand as critical reason, as in this kind of purposive, you could almost say objective thing in reality that brings contradictions to the fore, and thus an opportunity to produce better things, more rational things, which translates into better, more functional social institutions in the future. His fear was that if you're going to reject Heidegger basically rejects that in effect by saying that there's no it doesn't have any. You have to adopt a very contrived understanding of the philosophy of history to believe that's how history constructs itself. And he rejected it on that basis. And Adorno said, well, if you ultimately do that, and as much as that's actually a valid criticism, you end up at the mercy of irrationalism. That is of believing that ultimately reason has no value whatsoever, that there's no social potential in institutions, pre-existing institutions, having a positively engineering effect on us. And you end up justifying just about the worst forms of existence from that. And he of course, has, at this point, I imagine, the Third Reich in mind. And Heidegger, I'm not sure if it was at this point or not, was an apologist for us and a member of the party at some point. So this may be an overblown criticism. But it is just that point that if you're going to work from the position of, I don't know, my feelings, my truth, you end up with moral relativism and nihilism very quickly.
Yes.
And the political systems that come out of that, needless to say, are terrible.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.